Welcome. To the Flower Power Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Flower Power Podcast. This one's going to be just me. So I asked some questions on my Instagram, and I decided instead of answering in those little 60-second snippets, you know, I would come on here and actually be able to give a little more elaborate of answers. So, in case anyone's wondering, you might have noticed that Celtic Files Day 2 has not been released. Something went wrong with the audio file. I cannot get it to work, so I can't even listen to it at this point. So I don't know what happened, but unfortunately that episode is gone to the ether. But hopefully, you know, as games get going again, I can get some of those episodes again. And then I'm also working on trying to get more people on the podcast. So this one is going to be just me. But we will start out with some of the questions that were asked. There's first two questions here are, they kind of go hand in hand. So I'm going to answer both of them. One was, how did you start? And the other was, who taught you how to throw Highland games? So answers, you know, obviously very, very similar. I started when I was in Maine. I was competing as a post-collegiate athlete trying to qualify for Olympic trials. Turns out I'm not that good. And I met a gentleman by the name of Will Barron. If you're from the Northeast, you probably know him pretty well. He's a pro Highland Games athlete from Maine. We were both coaching at Division III schools at the time, both in Maine. So we saw each other all the time, and one day he just asked, like, hey, have you ever done the Highland Games or thought about doing the Highland Games? And at the time, I said, no, not really. I'm trying to do this whole track and field thing and kind of push it to the side. But then when I realized that I'm not that good in the hammer, I reached back out, and he invited me down to his house. He taught me all the events at his house. He had pretty much every implement. The only thing that was weird is he taught me how to throw sheaf with a duffel bag. So we literally took his pitchfork and stabbed a duffel bag and threw it up over some tree branches. So that's how he taught me to turn sheaf or to throw sheaf. He also taught me caber. He had a caber. I did end up breaking his caber. So sorry. But yeah, so Will Barron is definitely the one that got me into it. The one that taught me most of the events, the very basics at least. And then when I decided that I actually wanted to kind of focus on this sport and see how far I can take it, the only thing that I could really find online was Matt Vincent stuff. So I watched a lot of Matt Vincent's like training vlogs and things like that. I think he was called Going Deep, in-depth analysis of his own throws and things like that. I watched that a lot, and that got me a much deeper understanding of the events and how to apply the movements to those events. So I would credit Will Barron and Matt Vincent for sure. But you know, a lot of people have taught me things, over the years. You know, I've learned a lot about the hammer from, you know, Damian Fisher. He probably isn't happy about that, but yeah, no, I've learned a lot about the hammer from Damian Fisher. But a lot of people have taught me a lot of things over the years. Obviously, you know, my shot put background goes all the way back to, being in high school. I was a shot putter, and then I threw shot put at Arizona State under Coach Dave Dumble. So obviously, you know, when it comes to my knowledge of the shot put, but then also just my general athleticism, I would attribute that to Coach Dumble for sure. Okay. Should shame prizes be given to last place? I think that'd be honestly hilarious. If you're talking about like, you know, making bets with your buddies and, you know, doing like a fantasy football type of thing, I think that would be hilarious. you know, if you want to do so, if you're a games director and you're like, oh, you know what, let's do a little something for last place. I think that'd be funny. And I would hope that whoever is in last place doesn't get like butthurt about it or anything like that. But especially if it's like an agreement between buddies, you know, it's all good fun. Favorite pro games to throw at, there's a few, and they all kind of fall under similar lines. I mean, all the big ones are really fun. Victoria is one of my favorites. The crowd in Victoria is very engaged, very into the sport. Like, they know who most of the people on the field are. You know, they remember people from the past. I mean, I took a year off, and hadn't been there in a while. And then I got back and the people from the crowd were like, "Hey, Kyle, welcome back, blah, blah, blah." So they're very into the games and I love that about them. It's also a very athlete friendly games. Ray does a fantastic job of, you know, treating the athletes very well and, you know, making sure that you can get the best experience and get the best throws out of that games. Man, I don't know why I'm so yawny. I had to hold that one in. Okay. Colin Dunbar asked, sorry for calling you out, Colin. Maybe I can get you on and we can actually talk about this. But he said, will the Highland Games powers that be ever unite into one governing body? The quick 60-second snippet is, will they ever? I don't think so. At least not over here. I would love for that to happen, and anything that I can do to kind of push it that direction would be awesome. I would love the games to get a little more standardized, you know. I don't want it to turn into track and field. I love track and field. I'm a track and field coach, but there's a lot about track and field that I don't like from a competitor standpoint. So, like, you know, for the most part, I don't want it to be track and field, but, you know, having a governing body that can, you know, put out a set established, you know, rules, like, you know, what kind of trig, you know, you've got standard trigs, you've got wing trigs, you go to some games in the country and you've got freaking 9-foot trigs. Like, you know, yeah, maybe that needs to be standardized. For the most part, I think stones, you know, it's hard to standardize stones. I would be 100% okay going to shots like they do over in Scotland, but I get the draw of stones of, like, you know, this is the ancient way and things like that. But in Scotland, where this sport originated, yes, they throw shots. So, you know, I think that would be okay with me. No, I don't think it will happen. I think that's something that Scotland does really well. They do have a governing body that, you know, manages all their games, that makes sure that they all follow the same set of rules, that world records are tracked properly, you know, that you know, drug testing is ran properly and things like that. And I think they do a really good job of that. And do I think that could be something we should do over here? Yes. Unfortunately, I think people are so stuck in their ways that, you know, games are going to be games. They're going to want to do their own thing, and that's fine. But no, I would absolutely love for that to happen, but I don't think it will, unfortunately. Your opinion on lowest body weight to be competitive at the pro level. So this one's interesting. I've never really thought about it. You know, I've seen a lot of people at lower body weights compete really, really well at the pro level. I mean, you look at the Brichettes, neither of them are pushing 300 pounds. I don't know exactly what their weight is. I've never asked them, but, you know, they're not 300 pounds for sure. You look at someone like Scott Farr, who threw as a lightweight and then also threw as a pro. I'm assuming he probably walks around at like 220. I wouldn't think he would cut more than that to get down to the lightweight level. But I think, you know, to be able to push some of those big numbers, you do need some mass behind you. So I think, like, 250, 260 is probably what I would aim for if I'm looking for like a body weight. Now, obviously, if you're, you know, it depends on your height. I mean, if you're 5'2", one, you're going to have some trouble in the games anyway. But then also, you know, trying to push 250, 260 pounds at 5'2", is going to be kind of tough. But, you know, if you're between 5'10 and, I don't know, 6'2", then, you know, maybe 240, 250 won't be too much for you. And you can still be very athletic at that weight as well. You don't want to be, you don't want to put on 30 pounds of fat just because you're like, oh, I got to get up to 250. Like, you definitely don't want to do that. You want to do it the right way. Do I think you need to be 350 pounds like I am? Absolutely not. This isn't strongman. I'm actually in the process of trying to cut that a little bit. But, you know, you need to be able to move. And if, you know, pushing up to 300 plus pounds doesn't allow you to move well, then it's not worth it. So maybe 250, I guess, if you want like an actual number. Let's see. Feeling healthy and ready to break that lightweight world record. Healthy is relative. Do I feel good? Yes. Is my knee still very bothersome? Absolutely. And it's not going to go away until I have surgery. And I decided to delay surgery until after this year, after this season, I should say. So, you know, I was able to do what I did last year on the same knee. It hasn't gotten worse. So, yeah, as long as I continue to manage what I've got and, you know, do whatever I can to make it feel better, yeah, I think it's going to be another really great season, and I think the lightweight record is definitely in reach for sure. I'd like to push it, you know, if I can get it by 1 inch, I would do backflips, but, you know, if I can push it, I think realistically, honestly, I think 100 feet is in the cards, you know, right place, right time, right feeling, right weight. You know, I think it's in the cards, but, that's still, I mean, when you're talking about top end of, you know, what has ever been done before, 3 feet or 2.5 feet is, that's a big jump. That's a big jump. So even if I, you know, like I said, if I break it by an inch or a half an inch or a quarter of an inch, I'm going to do backflips, but, I'd like to try and push it towards that 100-foot mark. That'd be pretty sweet. Tips on caber. The tip that I normally give with most people, because it applies to most people that I see, especially more inexperienced caber throwers, I guess, is so once you pick it, once you have it in your hands and you feel that pressure of it on your shoulders. So you've, you know, you've got it in your hands, you feel it kind of leaning against the shoulder and you start your approach, you start your run. When you feel any relief of pressure on your shoulder, you got to stop and pull. Okay. Now you can control that and try and build as much speed as possible, but sometimes it gets away from you. And the second that you feel any relief of pressure on that shoulder, stop and pull. The reason for that is because you see a lot of people, they start running, it gets off their shoulder, and by the time they start pulling, it's like it's past their head, and that's way too late for 90% of cabers. You might get away with it if, you know, if you're really strong and you've got a light caber or a short caber, something like that. But if you're throwing high-end A pro-level cabers, you know, you have to be able to time that right. And to me, the timing has always been the second I feel that relief off my shoulder, any little pressure relief, I'm stopping and pulling. Sometimes that's early because, you know, maybe I let it get away from me. That's just caber. But, you know, if you can time that up properly, you're going to turn a lot of cabers. Okay. Why do you take a back step on your weight for distance windup? Kind of a long and interesting story there. So, you know, the short version of it is it's a habit. It's kind of developed over years. The actual step is definitely habit. I did start toying with the sideways start when Spencer started doing it. I'm going to be 100% honest, because I saw someone break the world record and I thought, well, him and I are about the same size. We're about the same weight. I'm pretty dang strong too. I know he's, you know, I think I'm stronger than him in some lifts. He's stronger than me in others. So like it kind of equals out. So like I thought, I think I can do that. We both had a throwing background, you know, so like it all kind of aligned. Like, I think I can do it that way. So I started toying with that sideways start and it did seem to work for me. You know, I was able to apply the speed that I want to apply right out the back, and that's definitely helped me get to where I am now. The actual step kind of evolved. Like if you watch a video of my throw from 2018, which was my last year's in AM, I threw 88 feet and my feet were pretty close to square, to the front of the trig, like a standard start. And then, as the years went on, you know, I kept trying to get a further backswing to try and apply more speed at the entry. So that would turn into, you know, as I'm trying to get that backswing, my left foot would kind of drift a little bit. So if you watch some throws from like 21, especially 22, I'm kind of at like a 45 degree angle from the trig. I'm not quite that full sideways start. When I came back from that year off, I thought, okay, I want to try and, like, lightweight's my all-time favorite event. It always has been. And until that point, I hadn't PR'd since 2018. Like, that 88 foot was my PR. And I had averaged somewhere around 84 to 86 every year from then on. So I was like, you know, it's my favorite event. I want to try and push it, and I want that event to be my event. I didn't know how I was going to return to the games, taking a year off, knee still kind of bugging me. I didn't know how I was going to return. So I did want to I at least want to have one highly competitive event. And if everything else kind of goes away, you know, at least I have that one, was kind of the mindset at first. So I did start working that sideways start again. I started doing it in, I think, 21, but I stopped because I just couldn't get it to work. And I started working on it again. And the step in was just kind of like, again, like I would start square and then I would step into like that 45 degree angle from like the year prior. And I was like, well, you know, I might as well just keep moving that. I've tried starting like static from the side, and the timing of it just feels completely weird to me, completely foreign. So, I let it continue, and, obviously, you know, it worked. I threw 97 feet, and, I'm not saying that that's why. I think the step in is just honestly kind of probably a bad habit, because it does kind of throw off my entry if I misstep or mistime the wind with my steps, because I do actually have to time my steps on specific points in the backswing. But so it might even be a detriment, but it's just what feels right to me, so I'm just going to keep doing it. Again, I've toyed around with, even throughout last year, I toyed around with just getting rid of the step in, because there were some days that it would just piss me off. But every time I tried, I could not get the same entry. So it's staying. And I wouldn't recommend anyone to even do it. You know, if you're athletic enough and big enough and fast enough to, and patient enough to, be able to get the sideways start, I say try it, but it's not for everybody and it's probably not for most people. And I think as it's evolved, you know, Spencer and I, because I've heard Spencer talk about why he did it, and we do it for two completely different reasons. I've never really had an issue fouling out the left, knock on wood, but unless you're in a standard trig, standard trigs are the devil, but I haven't really had much issues fouling out the left, and that was his whole thing. Like he said, you know, when he was driving to the trig, he was trying to drive to the left corner of the trig, and he would foul out the left a lot. And the way that he fixed that was starting the way that he did. I don't view it that way. I view it as I can get a bigger backswing and apply more speed on that entry and then be able to land in the right spot and apply that speed directly straight out to the field. So a lot of times, you know, yeah, I'm drifting to that left corner. That's unintentional. I'm not trying to get to the left corner. If I can get dead straight, I would. But my furthest throw is driving to that left corner. So maybe, you know, he did have something there, but no, I view it in a different, light than he does. But it's the same movement essentially. Minimum numbers before trying to go pro. Okay. This is an interesting one. My personal thought, now if you go back to like the old NASGA numbers or the current 2024 heavy athlete numbers, I've always thought that 7,000 points should be the starting point for a pro. And that may sound like a lot, even to some current pros, and I apologize, but that's just my feeling. But with the new, you know, with the records finally being updated on Heavy Athlete, I think, you know, that number is going to drop. I don't have enough data. I haven't done the research even to look at how much that's going to affect the numbers, really. So maybe it's like 6,800 or 67, 66, something like that. Like I'd be interested to see like last year's rankings with the new numbers. And maybe that's a feature you can do on Heavy Athlete, and you know, maybe I can figure that out. But yeah, I've always thought that 7,000 points is kind of the standard. Now, if you're looking at individual marks, let me pull up. I'm on Heavy Athlete right now. I'm going to pull up what 7,000 points was. Okay. So 7,000. So we actually had somebody on the list that hit 7,000 dead on the number in the professional list. They were ranked 29th. In their stones, they threw 41 and 51. So I've always thought 40-50 is kind of the benchmark. You know, if you're pushing 40, I think that's good. If you're pushing 50, I think that's good. But I've always thought 40 and 50 should be the benchmark for the Braemar. I lost it. There we go. Okay. For the heavy and the light, this person threw 33 and 74. I think those are pretty close. I think 75 and 35 might be the benchmark numbers. When I was looking at going pro, like my focus was 40-80 because I wanted to be competitive at the top. And if you're throwing 40-80, you're pretty competitive in most games. And nowadays, you know, the heavyweight, there's only a few people going really big in the heavyweight, like high 40s. But, like, you know, if you're throwing 39, 40 feet, you're probably still look like if you're competing at Celtic, most years you're probably still looking at, like, 7th or 8th. Like, that's just out of 10. So, like, that's, you know, that's still kind of middle of the pack for the top end. But that's what I always looked at was 40-80. But I think 35-75 is probably more realistic if you're like looking to go pro. This person also threw 103 in the heavy hammer and 122 in the light. I think those are dead on. I've always thought 100 feet in the heavy and 120 in the light should be about what you're aiming for to go pro. Caber's the interesting one because, you know, cabers are different for every class, every games. Some games are going to have really hard cabers for the A class. Some might have really, really easy cabers for the A class, whatever it is. The way that I look at caber as a pro, or if you're looking at going pro, I think you need to be comfortable attempting any caber that's put in front of you. If there's ever a caber that you're like, dude, I don't know, I don't even think I can pick that thing, you need to work on caber more before you think about going pro, because caber is, you know, it's the highlight event. It's what everybody that comes to the games wants to see. No one gives a shit about a 97 foot lightweight, really, other than like maybe the other competitors or other people that follow the games in depth. 97% of the people that show up to a Celtic festival or a Highland Games want to see the caber, and you, they want to see cabers go over. So at least being comfortable attempting any caber that's put in front of you is a good starting point for looking at going pro. And then if you can turn 50% of those, you're in a good spot. Sheaf, this person threw 24 feet. I think 25, 26 should probably be what you're aiming for. If you want to be competitive at the top level, you got to be near 30. But you know, if you're just looking at going pro, I think 25 is probably a good number. And then weight over bar. I think 15 feet, this person threw 15 feet. I think 15 feet's a fantastic mark if it's consistent for being pro. So if you can walk into a games and no matter how you feel, you know, like, oh, I got 15 in the bag, let's see what else can happen, I think you're in a good spot as a pro. You know, if you're clearing 13 every day and then every once in a while you're clearing 14 and then maybe you cleared 15 once, I think you need to work on it a little more. But yeah, so that would be the gist of it. You know, right around 7,000 points on the old score. But if you're looking at individuals, I think 40, 50 in the stones, 35, 75 in the weight, 100, 120 in the hammers, comfortable with any caber that gets put in front of you, 25 feet in the sheaf and 15 feet consistently in the wob is good benchmarks, I think. Good benchmarks. And if you're close to those, you know, maybe, yeah, think about going pro. You know, and you don't have to hit every single one of those. You know, if half of your numbers are there, you know, sometimes, especially if you're like on the East Coast where there's a lot more pro games, you know, you can get away with maybe some lesser events while you work on it as a pro. If you're West Coast, like I am, games are a little fewer far between, games are a lot more spread apart. I can drive to two pro games, in my area. I've obviously got Estes Park in Colorado. That's about 2 hours from me. I've got Albuquerque. It's about 5 hours from me. The next closest games to me is about a 12-hour drive. So, going pro as a West Coast person might be a little more difficult just because, you know, getting those invites and traveling that much might be kind of tough. But it's possible if you've got the numbers. I mean, you look at, where is he at? There it is. You look at like Danny Autry. Danny's scored, you know, 71.58, a good pro number. And he lives in Alaska. You know, obviously, you know, Alaska has won games that has pros, and it's kind of on and off with pros up there right now. He's got to travel a lot. And, you know, if he was sitting at 6,500 points, 6,400 points, you know, with the marks that get him there, I don't think he would be able to get into some of the games that he's gotten into because he is so far away. Now, if he had four games in a 5 to 8 hour drive, you know, it's probably a little more possible there. But I'm going way into the weeds on this one. What else we got here? When did you know you wanted to go pro in Highland Games? So there's two ways to answer this question. the first way that I'm going to answer this is I knew I wanted to attempt to go pro at some point after my second games ever. My second games ever was Loon Mountain. I've talked about this before, up in New Hampshire. But, you know, the amateurs only competed one day. The pros competed two. So one of the days I actually, you know, helped out on the field and shagged and things like that. But I got to watch literally some of the best in the sport at that time and some of the best to ever do it. You're talking about, you know, Matt Vincent, Andy Vincent, Scott Ryder, Spencer Tyler, Dan McKim, you know, literally some of the best to ever do it, multiple world championships between those guys, quite a few actually. So watching them compete and entertain the awesome crowd at Loon was the thing that made me say, I want to push for that. Now, if you want to look at it of when, you know, did I know that, like, I have the numbers to go pro? My goal was 8,000 points. That was my goal. I mean, if you go back, let's see here, go back to Heavy Athlete. We'll go back to my first year, 2016. But I don't want pro, I want amateur. Okay, I finished my first season with, I think, three games, with 69-44 for my point range. And then my second year, 2017, I finished with 7,600. So, you know, by my old math, I probably should have tried to go pro after that. And I knew that I wanted to, for sure. But I wanted to be, when I jumped in, I wanted to be competitive. I didn't want to just be a pro. I wanted to be a competitive pro. So the year after that, I decided, like, okay, you know, the numbers that would get me to 8,000 would, you know, push me to that range. I ended up finishing with 7,983, so I didn't get to 8,000. But I had a that's kind of not right. I had a 47 foot Braemar. I had a 58 foot open, 43 and 88 in the weights, 111, 131 in the hammers, 29 in the sheaf and 17 in the wob. So, all very, very capable pro numbers. So I thought it's time. And I actually got invited to, so I was going to compete at Pleasanton as an amateur anyway. But I ended up getting a last minute invite to join the pro class. And I did well. I finished that season as a pro at 7,931. So very similar numbers. I don't have the inflated Braemar that I had as an amateur. That's an interesting story. Norway, 2018, IHGF World Championship. One, the numbers there all are a little skewed because you're throwing off of a platform that's about a foot off the ground. So take that into account. You were also, I don't know if they do that anymore, but that's what it was then. Also found out after I threw a 50-foot Braemar, and I had broken the amateur world record before that with an actual 22-pound stone in Las Vegas at 47, I think. Comes out, it was like 19.8 pounds or 20 pounds, somewhere around there. And I ended up throwing 50 feet with it. And of course, I made sure that it got into NASGA because I wanted those numbers. But definitely a little inflated for sure. Okay. So yeah, those are the two ways that I can answer that, I guess. What's your biggest goal this year? Personally, my biggest goal is a world championship. You know, I've thought for years now, basically ever since I turned pro, I could be competitive at the world level. And I mean, even the year that I went pro, I was ranked fourth in the pro class, with four professional games that year. So I always thought that I could be competitive at a pro level. 2019, my first full year pro. I didn't get an invite to Worlds. I thought I should have, but I didn't. And so I didn't get a chance there. 2020, obviously the world shut down. 2021 was just coming back. There wasn't a Worlds that year. 2022 was the first chance I got at it. I was actually having a decent season 2022. I think I came in ranked third behind Spencer and John. Spencer ended up not competing. So like on the start of competition, I was ranked second. So I thought I could have competed there. But I ended up hurting my knee the week before pretty bad. And I actually had to wrap my knee in heavy, heavy squat wraps. The heaviest squat wraps I had. The wraps that I used when I squatted 700 pounds. I wrapped my left knee in that. And if you've ever used squat wraps, you know you don't have much mobility and they hurt like a son of a bitch. So it was not a fun weekend. I ended up finishing seventh. I knew that I didn't compete the way I should have, you know, barring injury, whatever. Then I took the year off because of that knee injury. There's been some controversy with that knee injury. Doctor told me there's really no hardcore damage to any ligaments, and it's probably just arthritis or, you know, cartilage damage, whatever. So I put off surgery. I just did rehab, all that stuff. And then when the symptoms really started coming back a lot more towards the end of last season, I got it checked out by a different doctor, and he told me that my meniscus root was torn. I could have gotten that fixed throughout that year off, but I didn't because I didn't know about it, which is very, very annoying. But, you know, I competed this past year at Worlds. I knew I could be competitive against John. You know, my stones weren't where they were at the beginning of the season. I'll be honest, I didn't put much focus into them. As the season went on, I just kind of relied on my, you know, previous shot put knowledge and stone knowledge and things like that. And I think if my stones were where they were in May, June-ish, you know, maybe it would have changed that outcome. Cause I think that's what, you know, we were only a few points separated, I think. So, you know, if I had, you know, jumped him in the stones, like I think I could have, you know, I think I could have gotten that one, but I didn't. And congrats to John on his third. You know, not winning again this past year, thinking when, you know, I'm having the best season of my life and I can be competitive here for sure. Definitely lit a fire for this next year. So world championship or bust for me. Some other goals, you know, I obviously want that lightweight world record finishing. I think it was either 4 or 6 inches off of the world record. Sucked. But I obviously want that record. I think I can also push the heavyweight record. I think I can get close to that. I threw 47 this year. The record's 51. That's a big jump, but I think I can push it if I put a little more focus into the heavyweight, because I didn't put any focus into the heavyweight last year. With all that being said about the weights, the way that I'm approaching this year is world championship or bust. So rather than like last year starting my off season or starting my, you know, my training season, thinking, well, I'm going to get my lightweight to where I want it to be and kind of screw everything else almost. I'm taking a much more balanced approach this year. I'm making sure that, you know, my stones are going to be on point. My weights are going to be on point. My hammers 100% have to be on point, because that's been one of my kryptonites for sure. I tend to eat a lot of points in the hammer at big games. You know, I'm in the process of getting a caber, so, you know, my caber can be on point. I'm going to make sure my wob is consistent and my sheaf is consistent as well. So with that more balanced approach, will I be able to put the kind of focus needed to actually get a big jump in, like, the heavyweight, for example, or that big, you know, continuing jump in the lightweight? I don't know. You know, as much as I want that lightweight world record, I would much rather have a world championship. So, you know, if I can consistently be at 92 versus trying to push for 100, that's still going to win me every single games. There isn't another person on, you know, currently competing right now that has thrown over 90 feet. Spencer competed once last year, but I wouldn't call him currently competing at the moment. So that's going to win every event. Same with, like, you know, 47, 48 in the heavyweight. You know, I think that's going to be able to win 90 to 98% of games that I go to. So, do I need to push it? No. Do I want to? Yes. But with this more balanced approach, I don't know if it is going to improve, but we'll see. I think, yeah, that is it. That is it on the questions that I got. So I hope you, enjoyed a little more in-depth explanation of some of those questions. I'm going to do this a little more often, especially during this off season. So, if you do have any questions, I'm going to post more, you know, stories asking for questions. But if you've got something that's just burning on your mind right now, feel free to shoot me a DM and I'll save it for later. With that being said, I hope everyone had a fantastic Christmas and New Year and is enjoying the start of 2025. And I'm excited to get back to the Highland Games this season. And I hope you are too. All right. Thank you guys for listening, and I will talk to you later.